been light on podcasts lately, and that's my bad. It's just we got carried away with three or four a week. It was like a regular job, and that's what it was. It's good to have you here on this podcast episode. It's a little bit before 6 o'clock here tonight for the Q105 studios. No night show tonight because we're running the AMAs, so I've decided to grab an old friend of mine, somebody that I've now known for about half my life, and old works in both ways because I've known you for a long time and we're now both old.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't actually give the year. I'm just glad you went with the half my life.
2000?
Yeah, 2000, December 2000.
This is my friend Sam Day.
Aww.
We don't have to use your radio name because it could create some legal issues, and let's not do that.
Okay.
So my friend Sam Day, when I started in Detroit working at 93.1 DRQ, let's see, Jay brought me, June of 99.
Okay.
When did you pop in and join the Tic Tac crew?
That was December of 2000 because I graduated in May of 99, okay. Went to college for 1 year at University of Detroit.
I never knew that.
Yep. I was going to be an architect.
Wow, you went totally sideways.
Yes, I flamed out very quickly my first year of school, so that puts me at May of 2000, and
okay.
Then I was working at Lids in a mall, you know, the hat store.
Yeah.
And then in December of 2000, I was driving around, heard Tic Tac say, I hate my interns! My interns suck! Who wants to be my new intern? If you think you can be on the radio, drive down right now! And I was like, I got nothing else to do, and I drove down, and
so
rest is history.
This was the top 40 station in Detroit at the time,
yep.
And to give you an example of who and what Tic Tac was, and you can give your examples.
Well,
I think the first weekend I had started working there, he knew that I liked dance music. And I had no problem with the gay community or the alternative community, and he took me to this place in the ghetto, which was the big gay club in Detroit at the time.
Menjo's.
I don't know if it was Menjo's or not, because they were all in terrible neighborhoods.
Was it an after hours or was it like during?
No.
Okay, if it wasn't an after hours, it was Menjo's. That's like the only legit.
It was a big place.
Yeah, yep, yep.
And then
we used to go there every Thursday as part of the show.
Okay, yeah. He took me there, and he's like, you're going to like the music that they play here? And I didn't care that it was my first time ever in a gay club, and it was very glamorous. I was like, the music is really good. But that was like with him like knowing me for 3 days, and it was an adventure with him at all times.
Yeah, yeah, I can remember you and him having several.
We can get to the that's down the road. That's down the road. What's your early quintessential Tic Tac story, other than just showing up when he was calling for interns?
That was really it, man, because I wasn't a huge radio guy. Like, I was the guy, this was back when you had 6 disc changers in your car. Mm. Like, I was the guy
in
that
in the
would,
trunk, right?
Yep, that was on my boombox. I was the guy that would load that up before I went out for the night, and, you know, I listened to my music, and I wasn't a big radio guy, and I walked in the studio, and literally there's like 40 people standing in line, and everybody's walking in, hi, Tic Tac, and me not being a big radio, I'm like, this guy knows everybody, not thinking that he doesn't know these people. They just are saying hi to him because they know of him, and I just remember sitting there, girl, we were doing the dirty joke of the week, and, you know, this is where you would give the punchline, or you would give the joke on the air, people would call in, you'd give them the punchline, and then you'd edit out the punchline so you just hear people laughing.
Was he even doing that, or was he just turning the mic off so the punchline didn't go over the air?
I think it was that, yeah.
Okay.
I think it was that. And anyways, this girl, she gets up there, you know, she's all nervous, she's got her paper, and he's like, all right, read the joke. And she reads the punchline. And, oh, my God, you would have thought, like, the world ended. Tic Tac throws stuff. He's like, you just ruined the whole bit. You know, goes to commercial, and he's yelling, and everybody's freaking out. And I was just like,
was it dirty?
No, I don't really remember the joke she messed up.
Did she read, like, pussy-licking motherfucker on the air?
No, it wasn't like that, but it definitely ruined the whole bit, because the bit was to have people call in to get the punchline. And so, like, Tic Tac's freaking out, and I'm like, I got another dirty joke if you want one, man.
Save the day.
Right, and the joke was, What do men and locomotives have in common? That was the dirty joke of the week.
Well, what's the punchline?
They both stop before you get off.
There you go.
Right, and that's a fun little playful radio joke, and he loved it, and he was like, get on the mic! That's your mic for the rest of the night! And you know, and then they called me a couple days later, and they're like, you're the intern. And then my first week interning was Stuff-A-Bus in the Oakland Mall.
Was that the time that there was like a porn fest? Or was that the following year?
No, the first...
Do you remember that?
I do remember. That was my introduction into radio. That was my first week of radio was Stuff-A-Bus. And the night show's live. You know, Marquise is out there in his shiny suit mixing in the parking lot. We're doing movie nights. And, I mean, I don't know how explicit you want to go, but it...
We can do as explicit as you want. That's the best thing about podcasts. This is why it's like I love doing what I do on the air for the night show, and then we come and we do this.
All right, let me rephrase that. I don't know how explicit I want to go, okay. But...
Is this the one with the heads?
The heads.
There were, like, masks.
Masks. Yeah. No, I don't remember
There were,
that.
Like, dudes... You know the masks that people take pictures with in Walmart now? Have you seen people do that?
Mm-mm.
If you go to Walmart, they have, like, these big fake heads.
Oh,
like,
yeah, okay.
Like that, which people
like
shouldn't
furry
be...
heads?
Yeah.
No.
Don't be sticking your head in that at Walmart.
No, there was none of that, but there was
That's
like...
That's what I saw.
Like, we just drank so much at, like, you know, midnight. There's a party in this parking lot, and there's nothing else going on in the city, and all these girls, like, that's where I met my longtime girlfriend at that time. You remember
Trish?
Not getting into that, man. Why are you going to call her out? But yes, that's where I met her. I met another girl named Spring. Like, I remember this vividly, and I was dating a girl at the time, and then, like, there was another part of it where Tic Tac was like, you know, first girl to go make out with Stick is going to get this, like, tickets to a concert. And mind you, I'm 19. Like, this is the weirdest, most awesome experience. This girl, like, two girls are fighting over each other to get to me to make out.
We got into radio just before things changed and got really, really conservative. Before, like, corporate clamped down.
And before, like, social media and stuff like that.
Well, it was long before that.
Yeah, long before that.
But I used to hear stories with people that I worked with back in Philadelphia about just the wildest club stories and this happened there and this.
Don't kid yourself. The clubs are still crazy, man. I hosted clubs up until, like, 3 years ago, and clubs are...
I know, but
wild
you didn't
still.
Have to, like, look over your shoulder as much, and there was a lot less accountability. Not that you were doing anything wrong,
right?
But you didn't know who was taking pictures of what. Like, this didn't happen back then.
Yeah, it was very freeing.
My, I guess, favorite memory from the Wyatt building when we worked there was we had really expensive CD players that we still played CDs with back then.
Right.
And they had pitch control on there. And... We left them at 2%, so they sounded a little faster. And I will never forget, it was Creed, Higher, pitched at about 12% or whatever that CD player went up to, and that was Tic Tac. He's like, it's a rock song. We don't play that on the night show. Crank it up all the way. Make it go faster. That song was over in like a quarter of the time because it was pitched up so fast.
Yeah. If it were up to him, he wouldn't even play the song. Right. That guy used to just pitch things from the logs. He'd win. So what do you do? What do you do when you win?
Would you agree that if it weren't for him, we probably wouldn't be where we are?
Oh, for sure. And I had this conversation earlier today with somebody that is in radio that if I had to win for one day, he's my guy.
I don't know.
He's my guy.
Can he still do that?
Yes.
Can he?
Yes.
Okay.
That doesn't go away, man.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, it's been so long since we worked with him. But I'll say this. Without him, like, he unlocked me. Like, I learned how to do radio from Jay and from others. And he, Tic Tac, taught me how to be great at radio and how to interact with an audience and bring out the emotion.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say, how to inject emotion into what you do. Because, like, with Tic Tac, you know, one night where we have a bunch of girls in the studio licking whipped cream off each other, and the next night he's threatening to quit his job because the Redford teachers aren't getting their salaries paid. And, you know...
I don't remember that one.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Not just radio, but it was fantastic as a young person in radio to see that... You can't just be, you know, dick and boob jokes. Like, you got to have depth. You got to care about your community.
You know, this is happening with Ariana Grande. Hit the post.
Especially today. Who gives a shit? Yeah. Like, this is for every radio person listening right now. If I'm ever air checking you, if I have a station and I hear you talking about Miley Cyrus's dog's haircut, I will not hire you. I mean, it's that simple. Especially the where we live today, if somebody wants to know that, the people who actually care about that already know it. Mm-hmm. And then I love the people that tease it. Miley Cyrus cut her dog's hair. I'll tell you what it is coming up in 8 minutes. Like, in the meantime, that 8 minutes, I'm going to Google it and find out it's stupid.
Yep, I totally agree with you. I totally, totally agree with you. Another tic-tac thing, you bring up the red for teachers. That's fuzzy for me. Do you remember, were you there when he said you couldn't smoke in your car anymore on Gratiot?
Yes.
And I think it was... Well, is that that's Roseville, right?
Yeah.
I think the Roseville police called like Alex or somebody or George, the GM at the time, saying, "What's going on? Our emergency lines are locked up because of something your DJ did."
Yeah, that that reminds me of also April Fool's Day prank that we played that we shut down the city. It was crazy. So like,
is this the limo one?
No, this is the gas shortage and the rolling brownouts. So
this must have been after I left.
It may have been. It was when I was still his intern. So it was, I was his intern for like 7 months there in the beginning, before Mikey and Big Bob.
Okay, because the brownouts were like in 2002, 2003.
These weren't an actual thing.
Okay.
This wasn't a thing. This was an April Fool's joke.
Because it was a brownout, okay.
Yeah, no, don't. So at 7 o'clock, we get on the air and we say, hey, at about 8:30 tonight, we need some actors to call up. You guys right now will be in on the joke at 8:30. We're going to go live with this. And
so there's disclosure. It's out there.
We disclosed everything at 7 o'clock. So we set up people to call from different cities and be like, yeah, you know, the power's going out here in Roseville right now. The power's going out in Troy. You know, gas prices are going to go up to $5, $6 a gallon. And so...
Before 9/11.
Yes. Oh, way before 9/11. So this is all going on, and you know, people are flooding gas stations, getting their gas. Just gas station lines are insane because everybody thinks prices are going to go through the roof because of the rolling blackouts. The next day, we come into work, and we literally had to sit down with the GM and sit down and be told about all these complaints we had about like single mothers who are on a strict budget to get their kids to school, but they spent all their money on gas yesterday because they thought gas was going to go through the roof, and now they don't have money for the rest of the week, and it was a joke, but it's not a joke to them. And
I don't remember this.
I remember Rachel Hunter had to go on air with an apology for us.
You guys couldn't do it yourself?
I think they suspended him and Rachel went on.
I don't remember that. I more remember the Red for Teacher thing.
Yeah.
Remember that one.
That was great.
So this was like 2002. This was 2000.
This was between 2000 and 2004. Well, all this is 2000 and 2004.
Was that in the Wyatt building or the Fisher building?
I was only in the Wyatt building for like 6 months, man.
Okay.
I have very few memories of the Wyatt building except like Rover on a Razor scooter being thrown through some walls. And I remember messing your show up. That's one of my earliest radio memories.
I remember you being in there. I was like, who's this tall dude? But what did you do?
So Tic Tac show ended at midnight, and then you came on.
Yep.
It was like 7:45 or 11:45.
Yeah.
Those weird kickoff times.
Because we had those kickoffs. Yeah.
Weird kickoff times. And you were like, hey, you know, this is when we were using CDs. Press this button into this button and play that button.
Oh, I was having you run the board?
Because you had to go to the bathroom.
Okay.
And so, like, I'm in there. I'm feeling good about myself. I know how to run a board, and I hit the button. I hit the sweeper, and then I nailed the CD, and everything sound perfect. I'm all swagged out. I turn to pop the CD, the old CD.
Took out the one that was playing.
Took out the one that was playing. I just, like, froze, and you came back like it was dead air. You're like, what's going on? And
I can top that in a way. When I was working with Jay in Philadelphia, we were doing 10 in a row or $10,000. So same thing. Like, I was so good at this. I could run this. But Jason, before you go on the air, you got to be able to run this board with your eyes closed.
Right.
And I essentially could. So he did his kickoff, you know, blah, 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 and here's blank. Fired that button, you know, got set up, popped that one out. Lines lit up because there was no rule like 10 in a row or $10,000.
Right.
What if you don't even finish one song? So the PD had to come in. Like, there was
had to rewrite the rules.
Technical glitches we're not responsible for. So what? What's a good story from another good story from maybe something that didn't happen on the air in the Fisher Building?
Oh my God! In the Fisher Building is, I mean, are you talking with Tic Tac or when I was running solo?
Either or. You want to tell the weed story? That's the classic one.
That's a funny story for everybody else. For me, it's kind of an awkward story. But
why?
Yeah, I used to do overnights in the Fisher Building, and like this was before automation and stuff like that. So you had to be there live.
Yep, hitting every button.
You were up from midnight till 5 a.m. pushing every button every 3 minutes.
Although Keith would threaten us, you know, I can automate this with like the flip switch, right?
Right.
I know you can. Stop saying that. On the seventh threat, it doesn't work.
Enco already scares me enough, Keith. So, you know, you do stuff to kill time on the overnight. Like, you know, you're sitting there for 5 hours. It's pitch black. You phones after 3 a.m. kind of died out. You used to do, like, third shift roll call and stuff like that. So I'd sometimes roll a blunt, like, behind where the studio was, right by the window, and smoke a little in the studio. One time I must have got distracted, and I rolled the blunt, but I left, like, a lot of weed still on the on the thing. And then we had a big staff meeting and everybody's sitting around this coffee or this huge long table.
There was like 20 people there, right?
Easily. It was the whole staff. Yeah. And this was when you had a whole staff. Yeah. And Alex Tier walks in with this baggie and literally throws it on the table. He's like, listen, I'm not going to point fingers.
And then everybody started looking at you because you were the only one that had the weed-smoking reputation.
It was like when you walk in, it was like a movie when you walk in, the record stops and everyone just looks at you. And I'm just sitting there like, it's not mine. I don't know what you're talking about.
I feel like I can hear the echo of a Dave Fuller laugh right. at the time. Wow. Because like Alex didn't even have to say anything because we just all knew it was you.
I plead the fifth. That was not
to this day.
I'm
glad
that's the only thing they found though, because there were some wild times back then. Like, you know, Godfather would come spin live from like 2 a.m. till 5 in the morning.
Yeah,
you know, Scroggs would be there, and you know they'd bring in ladies they met at the club. You know, hey, I gotta go mix at the radio station afterwards. Automotion was fun back then. We partied with them a lot at the studio. So.
When I got bored, I got in the habit of bringing my PlayStation with me. I'd play Madden, and that nabbed me one night for it. And then my downfall. Do you know that?
I don't.
When I got into the little scuffle
with Tech?
Yeah.
That was your downfall?
Well, kind of. That's what got me taken off of Electric Kingdom.
Okay.
But do you remember what started it?
I do, vividly.
You can share that story if you want.
If I have it right, I hope I'm not wrong. It was about your roommate, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Who he despised because I would talk about how she was like a...
He despised because she provided so much content he couldn't talk about.
Right. Okay.
Like,
yeah.
That's why he despised her. You guys had an agreement that you wouldn't talk about your roommate. That was part of your agreement living with her. She wouldn't talk about that you worked for the radio station and you wouldn't talk about her on air, right?
And I wound up there because I had to move out from living with Jay and I had to find a place to live. And he mentioned, he's like, Eric's looking for a place to live. Her and I went and met at Coney Island.
And she was Ramshorn. Hot. Like, she was a hot little Indian girl, right?
No, she was Arabic. She was Chaldean.
Arabic? All right. I thought she was hot.
She was, I was going to say, like, she's a mental terrorist, but I don't want to, like, conflate
that's
the
two. That's my type, man.
Anyway.
Like, that's how I roll, baby.
So, back then, the first red flag, we met at the Ramshorn. Her phone number was, and might still be, 248-931-9550. 931 was the station we worked at. 9550 was the other top 40 station.
Right, channel 955.
Not a coincidence? I don't know. But, like, I mostly kept to myself, and I forget what was so awful about it, because we had opposite schedules anyway, but you're right. He hated that he couldn't talk about all the ways that she bothered me.
Right. Right,
and then one night—that's
what Tack loved, was creating content. Yeah, right. One night
he couldn't fuck with me though. He wasn't allowed to fuck with me.
And then one night he goes on the air. I forget what he was talking about her.
I said something, and it probably pushed him over the edge. And he was ripping on her, and he said, "If Eric Stuff is out on Southfield Road when he gets home, I'm going to get every lawyer that's ever been on this show." And I lost it.
You punched him.
I didn't punch him. I physically grabbed him away from the microphone. threw him down and spit on him, yep. And then went. And
then
sat
they went
in the
to
bathroom.
The bathroom. Yes. Right. Yeah, I remember you were going to the bathroom.
Because I would have killed him.
The far bathroom.
Yes.
Dude, not like the one that was by the studio. Like, you went to the far bathroom.
Because he had one job. He had one rule not to break.
Right.
Do not fuck with Eric's
personal
life.
But that's Tic Tac, man. Like, you would have been better off saying, I don't give a shit if you talk about all of this.
But he always
abided
by it. And he
never would have, like, that's what got me out of doing stunts and stupid shit. And when I was first an intern, you know, we'd always make people go, like, just run around. I had to run around in a diaper at the Diag at the University of Michigan and get lipstick. Either girls sign me in lipstick or put their lips on me. And I had to get like 100 lip prints or signatures before I came back to the studio, or I wasn't allowed to work again. And I was baby New Year and all this shit. And I embraced it. I loved it. Like, I was out there having fun with it, like talking to girls. You know, I walked into Mongolian barbecue that's out there in Ann Arbor, and, you know, they sat me, and, like, I ate Mongolian.
They only have the pictures from then now.
Oh, my God. Thank God we don't. Because, needless to say, I'm a decently in shape guy, but I'm not anything you want to see in a diaper.
That was the whole point. Yeah. That was the whole point.
But I embraced it. And then after that, because I loved it so much and I wasn't like, oh, no, I don't want to do this stuff, he never fucked with me again. He would give it to like Old Dirty to go do, or Limpy would have to go do something.
Where's Old Dirty these days?
Ah, Macomb.
Same?
Yeah, Macomb.
Doing what?
I don't know. We're Facebook friends. We contact each other every once in a while, but I'm not up on him like that.
Yeah, so this is the guy that's responsible for us like unlocking ourselves and knowing how to get in touch with an audience and to keep it around.
If it wasn't for Tic Tac, I'd never be in radio. I mean, yeah. Who's crazy enough to take a kid who was a failed architecture student and be like, that's the kid I want as my intern? Out of all these kids standing there with their Specs Howard degrees and like all these broadcasting communications degrees and... just me, the pothead. Like, you know what made me really stand out? I can't leave this part out of the story. Got to give a shout out to Rover, who should be here today. That's actually part of the reason I was late. I was waiting on Rover, and then it got to the point where I was like, dude, I can't fucking
wait. I haven't seen that guy in 2 decades.
That's what he said. So
wild.
Anyways, we're all, like I said, we're all standing around the studio, and everybody's just waiting for their turn to talk to Tic Tac, and Rover's walking around with a notepad taking names, and...
You know, he was like his drill sergeant.
Yeah, he walks to me, what's your name? Walks to the next person, what's your name? And stops and, man, one of y'all smells like fucking trees, you know, Rover.
No, I don't anymore, man. That's funny as fuck.
And I'm like, you know, I smoked on the way there because I was nervous as hell.
Right.
I was nervous, man. And so I just raised my hand. I was like, yeah, that's me. And, you know, Tic Tac. I love that. I fucking love that. You don't care what any of these people think. I love that. And I was like, I don't care what any of these people think. And that's what made me stand out. So I credit my whole radio career to smelling like weed.
Smelling like weed. It's your cornerstone.
Yeah.
Let's jump ahead. I think it was like 2005. And there's been some jobs that Tic Tac took. But I remember... you guys being in Chicago briefly.
Yeah.
That seemed like a catastrophe. I was up in Monroe in this market at that time.
Yeah, that was a learning experience.
Aren't they all?
Yeah, but I'll take personal responsibility for that. Like, you know, Limpy and I interned for Tic Tac. I guess just to fast forward through the DRQ days, Tic Tac left DRQ, went to Philly,
yep.
Went to Pittsburgh, then came back to Channel 955 as a competitor. The day DRQ flipped formats, which was April 1st, 2004-5.
Sounds right.
2005. Tic Tac called me. He was like, hey, man, come produce my night show again. And he already had like people in place like Busy and Brill and a whole... like they had a show, but Tic Tac brought me in, and then we brought Limpy back because DRQ ended, and I worked for free again for 955 for a long time. You know, just because I loved radio, I wasn't doing it for the money, and you know,
it was easy. I mean, it was at night too.
If you're 19 to 24, radio, top 40, night show in a big market, it's the best job you're ever gonna find.
Paying. Like, $20,000 a year or semester for school.
Yeah, but you never pay for drinks. You never,
No, I mean, like, you can go pay for school,
oh,
or
yeah.
You can get the education in something you want to do.
Yeah, don't pay for school, kids. So where was I at?
You were over at Channel, but that didn't last long.
No, because Tic Tac was taking money under the table for club nights and promoting his own individual club nights.
Oh, he bought into a club.
Red Squared!
Yeah!
Yes! And we were staffing that bitch on the air like, I need bouncers for Red Squared. If you're a bouncer. My favorite story out of the bouncer, not to get too sidetracked, is this one kid sent in his resume and it was like qualifications. He put, I wrestle with my brothers. And he got the job!
Red Square. I have to tell Brent that. He'll remember that.
Yeah, so Tac had been slapped on the hand a few times.
When things began to get a little corporate.
Yes. He had been slapped on the hand like, look, man, you can't take money. We have salespeople out there selling club nights, and you're not plugging them, but you're plugging this because they're handing you duffel bags full of cash. And so they ended up firing all of us from the night show at 955. Like, just let us all go. And that was, I think...
It was 05 or 06.
That was December of 05.
Yeah.
December of 05. And, I mean, I was lost. I didn't know what to do. Like, DRQ flip formats, and I'll go over here. Now they don't want us anymore. Like, Tic Tac's talking about starting his own radio station on the Masonic radio network in Detroit. Like, you can buy spots and we'll just buy airtime and we'll take the night show, we'll do our own thing. And like, we were literally talking to people to advertise on our own time slot, and we would buy the airtime to be on the air. And then like New Year's happens, and
he wound up in Chicago. He got a call from Chicago
about 2 weeks later. 2 weeks after New Year's, Chicago called, 103.5 Kiss FM, and they were like, they wanted the whole show. They didn't just want him. The whole show.
Who's the PD of that?
Rod Phillips was the PD at the time, but Steve Perrin was brought in as a consultant.
Okay.
Steve was the one.
He was DRQ consultant.
Was he? I didn't know much about Steve.
He was.
I love Steve. I think he's a quirky, awesome guy. And I didn't have much experience with him after Chicago, but while I was in Chicago, I kind of bonded with him, I thought, at least on
so that's the connection. Yeah, he was the DRQ consultant, but from Chicago.
So they bring all three of us, me, Limpy, and Tac, and like, you know how rare that is, not only to bring one or two people, but to bring three people to do an afternoon drive show in Chicago was unheard of.
On a relatively new station that was going up against a heritage top 40. A rhythmic station then.
Yep.
Like a dance hip-hop station.
Yep. And we were 103.5 KISS FM, and then we did afternoons there, and we went number one, 1834, number one, 1849, within 2 months in a diary market. Like, we shot straight to number one in afternoons, and this is where the learning part comes in, and this should be a lesson to anybody. Like, I was 24 years old, number one fucking afternoon show in Chicago. I wasn't getting paid as well as Tic Tac, obviously, because, he's Tic Tac, and I'm just...
Were you getting part-time hours?
We were getting part-time hours and a couple, like, appearance fees. Like, they were putting down board op hours on other stations just to try to get us... But it's Chicago, man. Like, $15 an hour, $29 an hour in Chicago will get you a shoebox to live in. Like,
right.
So, kind of got to a point where, it was like, I need to get paid. Like, I've done all this for free. I've done this. Like, I kind of was entitled to, like, I need to get paid instead of just probably seeing past the immediate and, like, man, I could probably make this work. I just got to get through this beginning part.
You don't know what you don't know.
Yeah. And like I said, I was 24. I was arrogant. And next thing I know, I forget the guy's name. Anyways, he works for iHeartMedia now. Darren Davis. Darren Davis calls us in their office, and he's like, you two are done to me and Limpy.
What?
Just lets us go.
Why?
We were making too much noise. We wanted too much money. And to them, we're, when you're Mike 2 and Mike 3, you're replaceable. But the dirty little secret they didn't know about us is we worked well with Tic Tac. He trusted us. When he would go off the rails on certain ideas, he would defer to us. Like, we didn't control him by any means. You can't control Tic Tac, but he actually respected our opinions when it came to bits.
And this was the end of him there, right?
No. After we left, he stayed. Then Limpy and I stole the MySpace page, which had like 20,000 followers, which was huge back then.
Because this is where I think I remember hearing from, you might have reached out to me or to Brent.
I did?
I don't know.
Yeah, Limpy and I did because we did
sideways.
A shift at Tower 98.
Right. And you guys just wanted to get some tape.
Yeah.
And you came down to see us.
Yep. Which, in hindsight, we probably should have done more than just tried to get some tape. Like,
didn't you fuck up on the air, too?
There?
there. Yeah.
No.
Okay.
No, we just left early.
That there's something wasn't right about it.
Yeah,
you guys were supposed
to host a club show.
No, I think you guys got what you needed and you left.
Yeah, yeah. We did a bunch of slamming phones and we left.
Assholes.
And John was there.
John.
God, I forget his name. Anyways, he lives in California now.
So how much longer did Tic Tac...
John Kleft.
Kleft.
Yeah.
When Brandon was there with us as well.
Yeah, I was
they were
there
coming
with
down
Brandon.
From Detroit.
I wasn't there with
So how much longer did Tic Tac last in Chicago after you guys left?
I would say like 6 months, 9 months. You know,
he lasted that long.
He brought in some new guys, Govia, who's still in radio.
Okay.
But like I said, now he's got all these new young guys as a part of his show that he can just order around because, you know, they're young, they're hungry, they're not gonna tell Tic Tac to fuck off like me and Limpy would.
Know that he's a fucking powder keg waiting to go off.
Yeah, most brilliant guy you'll ever work with. You know, like I love everything the guy's done for me. So I don't want anybody to think that we're saying anything bad about the guy. But you know, this was truth. Like I don't think he respected the new guys like he respected me and Limpy. And you know, to me that kind of helped things go a little haywire there.
He also probably counted on you guys to be his medication, essentially.
Like we just got along. Like there was great synergy between the three of us. But either way, yeah, he got done there. But I mean, this is how amazingly talented Tic Tac is. He gets fired from Chicago, goes to Peoria, Illinois, you know, leaves there, goes to like I think Washington, leaves there, goes to the Utah.
Washington. The country station?
I think one of them. And he goes to Utah. Then he goes to his parents' house and lives in their basement for like a year or two.
In Texas?
Yep. Then he goes to Market Number Fucking One doing afternoons when they flip Now.
I don't remember when he was there. And if he was there, it was for like a blink, right?
No, he was there 2 years. He wrote out his contract. He left on his own accord. It was a cordial...
Really?
Yeah, yeah. But that's how talented the guy is.
And then where did he go? To Biloxi?
No, there were a couple more stops before Biloxi. But yeah, that's where he is now, in Biloxi.
Does he still have a Celica? He still has a Celica.
I hope he still has that blue Celica. He used to listen to FMQB air checks and that thing.
That was a badass car in 2000. My God. Like, he is driving a Ferrari.
Yeah, yeah. I remember seeing him like 5 years later, and he rolls up in the... I was like...
So what
dude,
was
you used to have like 100K in cash on you? Like, why are you driving the Celica?
After all this, like, what was the next benchmark for you that you remember in work and your career?
I was out of radio for 3 months, man. That's what I remember, or 3 years. That's what I remember. Is not
from Chicago till
when I got let go from Chicago. I didn't have my own equity. You know, being a Mike too, nobody gives you credit for anything. I was told, hey, you can't take credit for what Tic Tac did.
Right.
It's true. You know, he was the leader of the show. It does fall on him, but, you know, I'd like to feel that I was a part of the success, and I never really had, like, my own air checks and stuff like that to send out. And for 3 years, man, I was sending stuff out to everywhere. Like, Green Bay, Wisconsin wouldn't give me a call back. It was crazy. I couldn't get a call back from Green Bay, fucking Wisconsin.
I'm working on a leadership and failure speech for a presentation I have to do next month, and like the one hard lesson I had to learn when I was our age and in my young 20s, I was like, I don't get this. Like, I have really good shifts and host clubs on a really powerful radio station in Detroit. How come people in like these little shitty markets like won't even say thanks but no thanks?
They don't even give a shit.
Right.
They don't.
And it's a hard lesson that you learn.
But that's part of the humbling lesson.
Right.
Radio doesn't need you.
Right.
Ever. No matter who you are. Like, and that's just the way it is. That's the lesson you learn, is you appreciate being on the radio. You appreciate what you have because you're disposable as fuck, man. Like,
well, then, at least then, though, there were more jobs available. But it's like, the calculus in my head was like, I'm doing this in Detroit. Why can't I do this in Saginaw?
Right. I was just in Market Number Three, killing it. And like,
and Green Bay won't call me back.
Exactly. So yeah. For 3 years, man, I just like, I waited tables. I promoted clubs. I did whatever I could to get by. But I stayed in Bo Daniels' ear, who was doing afternoon drive at Channel 955. And he was always trying to get me in. The PD at the time wasn't a big fan of mine, so he didn't want to hire me.
Is it Dom?
Dom wasn't a big fan of mine. I think it had a lot to do, like I said, I had an entitled attitude. He looked at me as just a cocky dick.
Did.
Part of it was I worked for DRQ, and, you know, I think he looked at me as the enemy from the beginning. But I respect Dom. I think he's a fantastic programmer. So I kept trying to get in the door, and it just kept getting shut. But eventually he left 955 to go work for CBS. And Bo called me. He's like, hey, man. You know, Bo. Hey, it's Bo. You still want to do part-time? I was like, yeah, man, I'll do part-time. Like, I'll do anything. Like, you want me to sweep the fucking floors? Whatever I got to do to get back into radio, I will do it.
What year was this? Like, 08?
This was 08, exactly. October of 08. And so Mike McCoy got named the program director, and they let me do part-time. And I did part-time, shit, for like 6 years.
Did you do anything on the beat when it was
Yeah, I was the night guy.
Okay. I remember when that thing popped on.
That was a whole thing, too. Like, you know, Buddha was the night guy at 955 when I got back in 08. And then Buddha left, and they were looking for a night guy. And I was like, man, this is my shot. I'm going to get nights in Detroit. Like, that's all I dreamed of getting into radio.
That was truly your dream job.
That was it, man. That's all I ever wanted. That was on the map. And, you know, I put together, like, Buddha's thing was he was the voice of Detroit. Like, that was his moniker. And, like, I titled my letter, like, the voice from Detroit. And, like, you know, I wrote this beautiful thing to Mike McCoy. Like, man, this would mean so much to me. This is what I do. This is the bits that I would do. This is my upbringing. This is, you know, I have the playbook, man. Just let me execute it. And McCoy calls me in his office, and, like, I'm feeling good. Like, maybe I have this job. And he's like, well, I got good news and bad news for you. I was like, oh, fuck. He's like, well, good news is you're going to get your night show in Detroit. Bad news is it's not going to be on Channel 955. And they put me on the beat. And I told him, I was like, well, don't expect me to lose. I'm not over here to fucking lose. And, you know, the beat was a throwback station, but more of a pop-leaning throwback station, not like KRS-One, more like, you know, Madonna.
It was like the stuff that we'd been playing 6 or 7 years ago.
Exactly. Jay Towers was the program director. Billy the Kid was, you know, on the station.
And it did too
Lisa,
well.
Lisa. And that they named someone else the night guy of 955, and, you know, we started doing really well.
Yeah.
The night show was the number one 12-plus night show for that you know, for any pop stations, like the whole station in August of 2009, I want to say.
That sounds right. Or maybe a little later than that.
It beat AMP and Channel 12-plus, you
this
know.
Little pissant station.
Nobody gave a shit about. Like, we had listeners getting tattoos, like, ladies, moms coming up to me at clubs and stuff, like, with tattoos. They loved the beat. You know, and I brought back all the old tricks from DR. Like, I just redid the night show we did on DRQ because it was that audience, just older.
Yeah.
Instead of hot girl check-in, I did hot mom check-in, you know, and stuff like
and
that.
And it worked.
Yeah, we did, like, 90s at 9, where I play 3 songs from the 90s, but I'd have people vote for them on Facebook and explain why they wanted those songs, and I'd call them, and it, like, it was really cool. Like, oh, I want to hear Stevie B because I kissed my husband for the first time to this. And like,
so how did, because Javon wound up with the night show, right?
No, Javon was overnights.
Was he? I thought he did the night show.
No, he was always overnights.
Okay.
Yeah, he was always overnights.
Let's go to that part. That's the sad part, but it's also part of who you are now.
Yeah.
So you want to explain the relationship with Javon? Came in probably roughly at the same time I did
at DRQ. Yep.
Because he was quick. He would dodge and move with cards coming at his head from Lisa.
Lisa.
Don't go in the studio before 6:58.
Oh, I love my girl Lisa. She hated me at first, but we became great friends.
Yeah, so Javon came in same time in Detroit with me at DRQ and progressed along the way and didn't ruffle feathers like you did, so was able to maintain active employment. And then when I left to go to Orlando, he got like everything I was doing, like all the swing shift stuff and all the gigs.
Javon, I mean, to me, there was nobody like him in the industry. Like, everybody guards what they have so closely in the industry. Like, this is my club gig. You're not getting my fucking club gig. It's my air shift. You're not getting my fucking air shift. You know, that everybody fought for stuff. And even if you're friends, you're still not friends, you know, when it comes to the industry with a lot of people. And he never treated me as a threat. Like, when I was an intern, he didn't treat me like somebody that was trying to take his job, what he did is he watched me around and introduced me to everybody. They're like, this is my boy Stick. He's my boy. Now he's your boy. Like, take care of him like you take care of me.
He was like the first mayoral person I ever met, interacted with.
Literally.
And it was genuine, like you said.
Yeah, and it was every nightclub, you know, by this time I was like 22, 23, you know, something like that when like Javon was showing me around, or actually even younger than that. And we'd never hang out because whatever clubs he was hosting, I was hosting opposite.
Right.
So, but we'd always hang out at work, and I don't know, just the fact that he would share his empire with me, essentially, because I know half of my friends because of Javon. I'm still family with a lot of people, bartenders, bar owners now, DJs. Like, it's all because of Javon, not because I was the cool kid and knew everybody.
He knew everybody.
Javon made me the cool kid, and like, I know Javon. Oh, you're good. You're good, you know, and that was his special quality. Is it wasn't just me that worked with him. It wasn't just, it was everybody. He made everybody feel special, which was, it's insanely hard to do.
Yeah. But
after he passed away, I had to take over a couple of his club nights, and I'd never felt more pressure because, you know, the people that walked in that door were used to feeling a type of warmth, used to feeling like they ran the place because Javon ran the place. And, you know, you try your best, but you can't replace what that guy brought.
It was August of 2011.
Yeah. Yep.
I remember I had seen stuff about it, and I was hesitant about coming out. I did a lot of work. I was running a station in Allentown, and Azrock reached out to me. He's like, you need to be out here. He's like, you were closer to Javon than a lot of people who say they are, people that we work with. And I was like, yeah, okay, I'm coming out. And then the amount of people that were packed into that funeral home when his casket was open, I don't know the funeral things, but it was insane. It was asses to asses and shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah, and everybody there was his family. Like,
yeah.
Everybody, like, and that's what I learned about him afterwards, is just how much time and maintenance that guy kept up on other people's lives. Like, just calling, checking in on people, texting. I don't have that in me. Like, honestly,
it takes a lot.
Dude, I barely reach out to my mom as much as I should. Not like my friend down the street. Like, I don't know how he fit that into the day, but he was an amazing, amazing soul.
And beloved.
Oh. Incredibly.
So what was do we want to tell more stories? We have like tons of stories.
Oh, we could go for days, man.
I know. So I want to like kind of like not wrap it up, but ask you like, so now you're not working in radio because of certain things that happened to me in the past, but where's your head at? What are your takeaways? Who are you now? Just your outlook.
Well, let me preface all of this by saying my dad, 2 years ago, got diagnosed with cancer, and for 8 months he fought with chemo, and that changed who I am. Really?
Like, and he was in Arizona the whole time,
he was
right?
in Arizona, and, you know, I got to say this. My boss, Tony, was fantastic during that time. Let me work from Arizona as much as I needed to. It wasn't like, oh, you're taking too many days off. It was like, dude, you're still working down there. You're still maintaining. You're not going to be able to replace this time with your family. Spend time with your family. And I can't say enough about how much that meant, especially the further I get from it, you know, the more it meant. Because I felt guilty not being at my job. And, you know, you feel guilty. Like, I've been down here 2 weeks, man. Is it okay?
Right.
You know, you feel like eventually the other shoe's going to fall when they're like, tap, tap, tap. Come on. Like, quit fucking around down here. But that's changed, like, my whole, not outlook on life, but my goal, I guess. The goal used to just be success, success, success. Keep climbing this ladder, jump to the next one. I've been very fortunate to set goals and achieve them, and it's also kind of a hollow feeling, too. Like, I wanted the night show in Detroit.
Yeah.
I got the night show in Detroit.
Eventually, you run out of things to strive for.
Exactly, and then you learn, like, watching my dad, he lived his life 100% of the time. Like, he died without any money in his bank account, and he would always say, I can't take it with you. I'd rather spend it on the people I love. I want to spend it with experiences. He just wanted to live life. So that's really where I'm at. I love radio. I want to do radio. I have a lot of fun doing radio.
Like, it's easy. Like, I can't.
It's easy for us. It's not easy for, like, I listen to shitty radio across this whole country when I'm driving.
There's more shitty radio than there is.
Oh, my God. It's like,
we've
We were lucky. We were cultivated in a time where radio, like, I don't know how to explain it. I honestly
we were
don't...
still allowed to have fun. It wasn't micromanaged and overanalyzed. Fun was fun,
right?
And then the ratings methodology changed everything. Which
yeah.
I've been fortunate enough to not be subjected to that.
I like both.
There's pluses and minuses. And
diary's easier, I think.
Yeah, because it's neither are good, but it is what it is. We have what we have.
Yeah.
I didn't like the meters because there was so much bad radio out there. It impacted the good ones.
Right. Well, that's the thing. When
7 seconds or less.
Right. Oh, well, this guy's saying this and people are tuning out. Well, what the fuck is that guy saying?
Yeah.
Like, give me the content and what he's saying first before I'm like, oh, well, I can't talk for 20 seconds. You know, like, not to go back to my dad or anything, but going through that, when I was on the air, I talked about my dad all the time. And like
right.
that, you can't do that in 7 seconds. And that's how you build a connection with your audience. That's how you share your personal life. You do personal things.
Yeah,
and honestly, it's therapeutic,
especially now in a larger scale of all of this.
Right.
I have to put the satellite up. Okay. Like Chainsmokers is playing right now. You can go get Chainsmokers in 30 seconds on your phone somehow.
Yep.
But you can't get what we can provide.
Right.
And sure, there's other people who can talk about a specific something, but if you know us, we can give you a part of our lives, especially if we're, you know, local personalities here talking about what you do and how you do it and where you do it.
Yeah, and it doesn't even have to be local, man. I've seen shitty live local people get beat by great voice tracking just because they get it. They get how to be personal. You know, Billy the Kid, when he was on Channel in Detroit, prime example of how you don't have to be local. Even though he's from Detroit, knows mm-hmm. the lingo, knows the area. I mean, he would talk about his son, Ryder, and, you know, I was doing the night show, so I would come in afterwards, and one time I answered the phone, and it was this girl just talking about Billy's break and how, because of that, she's naming her son Ryder. I was like...
Can have an impact on
people.
It
doesn't matter if you're voice tracked or not. Good radio is good radio.
Mm-hmm.
Like... Local is key, it is, but unless you're being personal, it doesn't matter anyways.
I bring it up to echo your point of like the Miley Cyrus thing.
Yep,
like,
yep.
You can get that a million different places. What yeah. about, in a way, we're special, we're good at this, and I've been working on some speaking engagements like lately, I'm trying to figure out, am I good at what I do because I'm so forthcoming, or am I forthcoming because of what I do? And as with most things, it's probably a combination of both.
Yeah, one hand washes the other type deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I could never like not do this.
Right.
Or I don't know what else I would do. And I don't know about you, but I just couldn't have like a normal job. And I know there's no such thing as like 9 to 5 anymore, but I couldn't see myself not wearing Transformers t-shirts and jeans and sneakers and whatever.
I'm just very opinionated and I love having an outlet to where my opinion yeah. can go to multiple people and hopefully impact people. Like, you know, I've evolved over my time on the radio, you know.
You
like
got older.
Yeah.
Both
like,
of us.
I mean, 4 years ago, I'm doing All You're Smarter Than a Stripper on the air and stuff like that. But now that I did afternoons in West Michigan, I've tamed it down a bit. But yeah, back to the original question, where I'm at. I love radio. I want to do it. I just want to go to a spot that understands the work-life balance and it'll happen, man. And I want to go to a spot that understands that radio is supposed to be fun, and that's it.
Yeah.
Like we're not supposed to be robots. We're not supposed to hit posts all the time. We're not, you know.
That's intros of songs or where people sing for
yeah.
non-radio people.
Yeah, I mean it sounds great. It's radio porn for us. Like mm-hmm. that guy killed that post,
right.
but
nobody
listen.
Cares.
No one cares. It depends
right.
on what you're saying.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's where I'm at. I'm just ready to have fun again.
How do you feel about like music, the industry, the competition in general?
Because
it is tougher than ever.
And tough.
I mean anything.
Well, musically, I think music is music. It's an ever
evolving.
I mean, like,
there are people who are listening to Netflix in their
yeah.
car
yeah.
as opposed to, you know, what we did a long time ago. There's so much more fragmentation.
Yeah, there definitely
makes what
is.
We see so much more vital.
And that's where, you know, the jock is becoming more important than
mm-hmm.
less important.
Yeah.
You know, the more that we go to streaming services, like, I forget when it was. It was like 3 years ago. I was driving up in the UP. and I was by myself driving to a campsite with my friends, and I'm listening to the radio, and nobody's talking. It's just playing music. Dead Seg, Shitty Sweeper, Dead Seg. And then I flipped to another station, and I don't even know if the person was live or not. But when they started talking, like, I felt better. I didn't feel alone while I was driving because it was dark. There was no one on the road. But when I heard that voice come over the radio at 2 a.m. in the UP, like, I don't know, for some reason it was just like a epiphany moment of like, that's what we do. Like, we're companions.
Yeah. And now it's more than just that interaction, because people have such access to us through social media channels where you can just shoot me messages. Somebody just said, like, somebody messaged me about a walk that I did over the weekend. She's like, great job, thanks for doing it, blah, blah, blah. And she just said, you're fun to talk to. I'm like, I don't recall ever talking to you ever in my... She's like, it was just once, but I mean, people have that kind of access. And,
right.
It's nice that we can provide that for people.
Yeah. I think you've done a great job of using the platform to talk about things that are issues to a lot of people that people don't like to talk about. Well,
thank you. I have nothing else to talk about. That's why.
But it's the same thing, man. It's like, you got to be strong to open up in front of a million people about your inconsistencies and your insecurities.
But to me, they're not insecurities. They're everybody else's. That's why I talk about it.
Right. And owning them is great. Like, I try to own that. Like, I try to be as positive as I can.
I know. We can wrap up with this, I suppose.
Okay.
So I suggested that you submit some stuff for the TED Talk in Detroit. Now, they didn't pick you. They should have.
Sons
because you have an endlessly positive, glossy, Pollyanna outlook, and it's totally genuine. Like, no matter the depths of sorrow that you were in going through your dad, your best friend's passing, and everything else, there's always some motherfucking happy, positive stick post on the internet, and it was real. And I'm like, how could he not have a bad day? And that's what I wanted you to talk about. That's my TED Talk.
That's your TED Talk?
No, that's your TED Talk.
Yeah. No.
How do you stay like that?
Honestly, I've dealt with a lot of diversity my whole life. And not like the type of, like, my dad was abusive. Like, not real issues, you know what I mean? Like, I was asthmatic as a kid, and that really held me back from a lot of things I wanted to do. Like, I was really good at playing football and sports in high school, and then I had to have surgery on both my knees. So, like, my whole plans of being this... Like, I've had a lot of things that I like just taken away, and I don't know. I don't know why I'm positive. I just know that it's better than being negative. Like, I do not know where being negative will take you.
Right.
You know, I just got let go from my job last Monday, and, you know, I could sit there and, man, I should have done this, and I should have done that, and, oh my God, my future this, my future that, or I can stand up and be like, man, I'm good, like, I'm me, like, what's the matter with this picture? I'm going to find another job, I'm not concerned about that. So really, to me, it's the alternative isn't an option. So it's not that I choose to be happy, it's just I choose not to be sad.
And it can be as simple as that, because you're right. And for me, and we're all different. I mean, that's what kind of makes it good sometimes.
I'm clinically insane, like, for real. Like, you know, I've been diagnosed with like ADD when I was 10 years old. Like, before it was
cool.
Yeah, like, for real. I had to go through like mountains of tests, and I was devastated when I was 9 years old, and they looked at me and told me I had a disorder. Like, you know, when you hear the words disorder when you're 9 years old, it's horrible. I ran out of the doctors. I was crying. Now I embrace my crazy brain, and I love it.
Like, it's a source of who we are.
Right.
Like, I couldn't imagine ever not being, like, a little sideways. Like, it's a source of creativity. It's a source of a lot of things, a lot of good things.
Yeah, so really I just stay positive because I don't like the other option, and I don't see how it will ever help.
Right.
And it doesn't. I've seen lots of people take themselves down rabbit holes that I never want to go down. You know, obviously, like, losing my dad was tough. But to me, when I was giving my speech at his funeral, people coming up to me at the funeral, like, I'm so sorry. You know, giving you the head nod, the drop to the side, like, I'm so sorry. And finally, I just got on the mic. I was like, I need people to quit telling me they're sorry.
Right.
Stop. Don't be sorry for me. I had the best fucking dad for 65 years. Not 65, but he was alive for 65 years.
I outlived my dad, and right. He was younger than me.
But for real, I don't look at it as, oh, I got robbed of 30 years of my dad because he didn't live to 95. I look at it as, holy shit, man. If I had to do it all over again, I would take my 35 years with my dad than, you know, 60 years with a shitty dad.
Right.
And so that's how I tried to look at it. And some people don't agree. You
and
know?
That's that glossy outlook that so many more people should have. I wish I could have that more often.
You can.
I know, you but can. I can.
You just got to think about things.
I know, you know? I know. Yeah. Sometimes it's a tough fight against my own mind, though. So and sometimes for me, like, I will dwell on the negative. Like, I will give in to that vortex. I will let it suck me in instead of fighting it. Because sometimes fighting it makes it worse.
Right.
So it's like I just let myself float into it. And then I let it spit me back out.
But don't get me wrong. I was depressed during what my dad was going through.
You should be. Like, it's awful.
And that's another thing. Like, people who try to minimalize how you're supposed to feel, like, oh, you know, you're acting weird. It's like, you're goddamn right I'm acting weird. Right. My dad's getting chemicals shot in him to kill a cancer that's, we found out when it's stage four, it's not happening. If I was acting normal, that's when you should be concerned.
Right.
Not when I'm acting weird because right. I'm going through some shit. So go through some shit. Own your feelings. Like, that's another good thing. People try to hide from it. No, go through it. Be depressed. And acknowledge it. Like, I'm depressed right now. I'm going to come out of this, but right now, I'm fucking depressed.
Yeah. And if you don't, go get some help, because when people die, when bad things happen, be sad.
Yeah, the worst thing you can do is try to fake it.
Final thoughts?
I love you, man.
20 fucking years.
It's good to catch up,
20
man.
Fucking
and years. We only made it to like 2005 in radio.
what do you mean? Oh, wait. I mean, those. Let's be honest. Those are the really good stories. Do you really want to hear about us answering grumpy emails from people that we really don't like a whole lot?
Yeah, but I
that
mean,
was the latter like, half of things.
Like, that was like the first stage of my career, getting back into 955 and all that, and like 08. Like, really, everything changed from them. So that's a whole other story. But yeah, dude, we got radio stories for days.
Yeah, that could be part two. We'll do other stuff because there's so much in Detroit. I grew up. I became a human being in that city.
Yeah, that's. I love the time I grew up in that city.
Me
too.
Me too. Like, you know, not to go down too many memories here, but like, it's 10 o'clock Tuesday night before my shift. I'm gonna walk down this really sketchy neighborhood and go to the dangerous ass Chinese restaurant. I watched somebody pull a gun in that place before, but you know what? That's why you got the bulletproof spin glass. And you know what? I didn't care if that guy shot the whole place up. I wanted my General Tso's chicken,
and it was delicious.
It was, and you know what? It just made us who we are, and I will always have love for that city. It's have we gotten so old that we're cranky about the Renaissance downtown?
I'm not cranky about it, man. I love okay. it. I love it. But like I said, I'm happy I grew up when I right. did in Detroit.
Right.
When it was the Wild Wild West. When it was
sure.
a lot of fun.
St. Andrews. There was the... What was the place we'd go to eat before? The Greek place.
Plaka's.
What? No. Plaka's was the diner.
Yeah.
This was some little Greek pizza place that we would go to right around the corner from St. Andrews.
I don't know.
But I remember Plaka's. That little dive hole next to Greek Town.
Still there.
Good place.
Still there.
What's your very favorite? We'll wrap up with this. Your very favorite restaurant in Detroit, or the area of.
My very favorite restaurant.
And if you
want
to give me like an old school one that maybe isn't around, and a new school one, do that.
Yeah, I love Roma Cafe. Okay. I think they closed, but they reopened. It was the oldest restaurant in Detroit. It's in what do you call it? Eastern Market. I used to love this place. It was called Hella's. It was in Greektown. It was like authentic Greek food. Whenever I had a date back in the day, I'd take her there.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. If I'm going someplace, I love Prime and Proper, that new place.
Where's that at?
It's kind of right by the Coney's. Like, it's literally a block away from the Coney spots. Yeah, I don't know, man. Really, my favorite place to eat is right outside of Detroit. It's called Boodles.
Where's that at?
It's in Madison Heights, like 12 Mile and 75.
What kind of place is it?
It's like your old school steakhouse. It's this guy, his name's Bruno, And he still cooks the steaks tableside, like all their specialty steaks. And this guy's like 90 years old, but he still handles all the business. It's fantastic.
We have a family here that has a lot of restaurants. It's called Mancy's.
Okay.
And the original one is kind of like in North Toledo. Not in the best neighborhood, but not in a terrible neighborhood. And I have actually never been to it because when I go for like steak places, I go to other places. But they say this place is like walking into like Goodfellas.
That's awesome.
It's just got that, that 80s steakhouse. Yep. People in there are made people, and I really just need to go for the aesthetic alone.
Yeah, I'll take you to Boodle's. Like, it's kind of like you're in an old ship. Like, it's mahogany walls with like the circle windows that are brass, and like Bruno's wearing his captain's shirt with the little things on the shoulders.
Some good places up there.
Yeah, it's good times.
All right, this is my buddy Sam. He was stick up until last week.
No, I'm still stick, man.
All right.
Like, radio doesn't define who the fuck I am. Like, I'll be stick till I'm 97 years old.
Yeah.
Like,
how many people know you? Everybody knows your real name because it on like Facebook and stuff, it says Sam.
Yeah, I don't hide what my real name is. You know, right. Like, it's never been a secret. But yeah, I mean, shit, I've been stick almost as long as I was just Sam.
Yeah, I still remember the day it was whenever it was. It was like, his name is Clarence? His real name is Clarence?
Yeah, the government name.
Let's go with Sam. Sam works.
Yeah. My middle name's Samuel, so that's where the Sam comes from.
All right, that's our podcast.
Yeah, hope you enjoyed.
This has been a Cumulus Media and Q105 collaboration. Three unicorns were harmed and lost their rainbows and horns in the production process. We use cookies for various purposes, like eating, and flavor for protein shakes. And you have agreed to this and all other secret policies by enjoying the preceding audio content, which we highly encourage you to hashtag subscribe and share. You can click here for all other legal crap. And now hit skip intro to go to the next podcast. Just kidding. It's the See More Episodes option in your app. Q105.